They only come out at night. They're mean, rude, and dead. Not them. Them.
There's 100 of those things out there.
How many did you say?
100.
The dead are refusing to remain buried.
What are we gonna do?
What are we gonna do?
We're gonna call the boss.
They've come back to life. They're hungry. And they're not vegetarians.
The graveyard out there is full of people coming out of the ground.
We have a little problem.
What the hell is going on there?
Rabid weasels.
What?
More brains.
Do you want a party? It's party time. We got a party. It's party time. Do you want a party?
They're back from the grave and ready to party.
It's party time.
The return of the living dead.
More brain.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent, here with Kevin and Dave. Hello.
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 It's a remote week for us. Kat's in Florida, and the three of us are bracing for what could be the worst snowstorm of the season.
Insult to injury.
You guys see anything besides the selections this week?
With the first movie we're going to talk about, I naturally had to watch the sequel and then part three.
Oh, wow.
A couple of years ago, I had actually watched parts four and five, which are completely unwatchable.
Yeah.
So I watched two and three. Didn't remember two a ton. Three, for some reason, I think that was like a big HBO or Cinemax one. So I knew that one pretty well. And then I don't know how this happened, but I also went down like a major non-alien space horror movie journey. So I think I was just looking for something to put on in the background one day. And I ended up watching like The Last Days on Mars. And then that just started feeding me like Apollo 18, Mission to Mars, Red Planet,
wow.
Europa Report. So a whole bunch of, don't worry, I'm not going to torture us with any of them because they're not all that great, but they're pretty fun.
What was the one, didn't Carpenter do a Mars movie?
Ghosts of Mars. That is wildly unwatchable. It's so bad.
Okay. You didn't revisit Event Horizon.
No, I mean, I honestly think you guys damaged Event Horizon for me because I had such fond memories of it from the 90s. And you guys really took me out behind the woodshed on that one. Yeah, so every time it comes across the screen, I feel pain. It's triggering for me now. Yeah, you guys ruined a part of my childhood.
It's called trauma.
Yeah.
Save the trauma for your mama. I've been feeling bad about Event Horizon because it pops up all the time because a lot of people love it. And I've been questioning myself, maybe, you know, I feel like we were much harder on the films earlier in the podcast. I feel like we had much bigger chips on our shoulders and we were much more likely to just trash stuff. And I kind of wonder if maybe we were too harsh on.
Well, we've broken each other's spirits so many times over that.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Mercy.
I got a new recommendation for you guys. Have you ever seen Mute Witness?
That's great. Yeah, the one with the cover has the sewn.
It just hit Shudder. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's it's like an old, is it?
95.
European?
I haven't even, it is because it's all filmed in Russia. Yes.
Yeah, it's more like a thriller, but yes. It's great. Yeah, I like that movie a lot.
Have you seen that, Kevin? Mute Witness?
No, I have not. I know nothing about it.
Right up your alley. It's an underseen 1995 horror thriller. It's about a woman who does FX on a film shoot for a slasher film. And they're filming in Russia in a big mixed-use scary warehouse. And one night she ends up there late and she happens upon some of the crew members of the film that she's working on. They appear to be making a snuff film on the side. And from there, it just goes balls to the wall thriller. I was not even prepared for the tension. It just starts and goes until the end. It's really good. It just hit Shudder.
That would pair well with Hush, although that's one of those movies that's been in oblivion.
I think it's off
Netflix. Yeah.
Hush is gone. It reminded me of P2 a little bit, which is, you know, I think an under-discussed good horror thriller.
Christmas movie.
Did you ever watch Malum from last year?
Oh, yeah.
I think I did.
The remake. It's a remake of...
Last Shift remake.
What did you guys think of that? Because I finally saw it.
It was cheap, but there were some parts that I thought were scary.
Yeah.
But I did like the original one better, but some parts were incredibly cheesy. But then other parts were like, wow, that actually kind of scared me. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a great premise. Both movies don't quite nail it. But I mean, I love the premise. I'm rooting for both versions every time I watch them. There's something just indie charming about the first one. And I feel like if you're going to just like go back to the same movie, same people and all that, you know, you really got to stick it. And I thought it was a little cheesier and maybe with a lower budget. I feel like what I remember of this new one is there are some questionable effects in it.
We had mentioned Pontypool because of the other movie we talked about last week. It lives in that world with me. Like, okay, pretty good, better than average, but not great.
Hmm. I saw Last Shift only. I first saw it like only a year ago, and it's been long enough that I don't know. I just watching Malum now. I don't understand really why Malum exists. I was assuming it's a bigger budget because it's the same filmmaker, right?
It looks like a lower budget.
Okay, I haven't looked into the facts of the matter, but I just assumed it must be a higher budget. Why else would you do this whole exact same thing again when the first one was pretty great, I thought?
Yeah, I have no idea. We would have to look at it. I'd love to know the reason, but like I said, it confuses me if you're going to go back, make your same film again. And I mean, there are good parts of it, but I mean, I don't know. It has this... Maybe not the same gaps, but there are still gaps that stop it from being like an absolute, you know, sort of like indie classic.
Yeah. Do you guys remember those vomit bags that we got at the Christmas party at George and Leon's?
Yeah.
From Sean. Yes. For Mark of the Devil from 1970. I've been meaning to get to that ever since I look at this vomit bag still most days. And I finally saw Mark of the Devil. It's on Tubi. It's very much a Witchfinder General ripoff, which we haven't talked about specifically, but we talked about Blood on Satan's Claw, which is the same. It's 1970s British folk horror, which it's kind of more like witchploitation really than a horror movie. It's kind of like a historical crime exploitation. It's pretty good. It's no Blood on Satan's Claw by any means. I mean, I don't even really think it's Witchfinder, but the barf bag is a stretch. I mean, there's some torture scenes and stuff, but
that barf bag says some crazy things on it. It claims a lot.
The barf bag is awesome. I think I like the barf bag better than the movie, actually.
Thanks, Sean.
This week it's my undead week. I'm going to start with a classic that we haven't talked about from 1985, The Return of the Living Dead. When two bumbling employees at a medical supply warehouse accidentally release a deadly gas into the air, the vapors cause the dead to reanimate and go on a rampage, seeking their favorite food, brains. This one is pretty well ingrained from my childhood. This is one of those that, surprised it hasn't come up yet. The theme song, Party Time, by I believe a band called 45 Grave, that's been in my head for my entire life. It never gets old. It's been in my head all week. I love that song. I love the montage with the skeleton comes out of the grave. The half dogs, the split dogs, as they call them. That's part of me. The cadaver, the first cadaver that's all yellow and running around like crazy, and they have to chop the entire body up, and it still won't die. That stuff lived with me and just creeped me out and grossed me out. I mean, Tar Man, More Brains, all of it. Classic stuff. And I didn't really realize, it's really interesting for me, because I just kind of took this movie for granted. I didn't realize that it was produced by Russo, who is a co-writer. John Russo is a co-writer of the original Night of the Living Dead with Romero. And I was really impressed with how we can talk more about that. It's a very weird and convoluted relationship, but I was impressed with how this movie separates itself. This is nothing like any of the Dead movies. This is more like a National Lampoon's 80s zombie take, even like a Porky's, if it just had maybe a little more sex in it. It's very funny. It doesn't have any of that. This is the same year as Day of the Dead, the Romero movie. Deadly serious, probably the most serious one, almost claustrophobic. This is the punks and the great soundtrack, and they rewrote the mythology a little bit. I didn't remember that. This movie acknowledges the first Night of the Living Dead film, but explains it away, or you know, changes the story. You cannot kill them by just hacking the brain in this one. They only want brains. You know, that's different. They're not satisfied with any flesh. Really, really fun. I mean, there's just nothing to complain about with this movie. It's a classic. It was directed by Dan O'Bannon, who became enmeshed in this whole convoluted thing. But I can't go wrong. This is on Tubi. Easy one. Loved it.
This is the greatest movie we've ever done on the podcast.
Wow.
I started watching it this week and was like, you know what? This is the greatest horror comedy I've ever made. Shaun of the Dead, I got nothing on this. It's better than Shaun of the Dead. Then I watched it again. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. This is the best movie we've ever done on the show.
You told me it was the best horror comedy of all time. You've upped it since then. That was days ago.
And then, I mean, tomorrow it'll be the greatest movie of all time. Forget about horror. Forget about the show. But same as you, Trent. I was watching this way too young and watching it over and over and over. This was always on one of the Cinemax or the HBO. This was constantly on and unedited. And this is one of the most important movies in my young adulthood and discovering things about myself. The Linnea Quigley scene is top three all time of just certain things that it did to me. Dan O'Bannon. I always forget about this because I have looked into this. I swear to God, I've researched this movie as though we've done it on the show.
I kept thinking we had, but we have not.
Dan O'Bannon, the writer of Alien, somehow now comes on and directs Return of the Living Dead. Like, that's wild. Yeah, the Romero Russo story, that's wild. But every single thing about this, like when I started watching it, and you get a great like intro scene with our two people at the medical warehouse. And then you get that whole callback and they sort of bring in the Night of the Living Dead as, hey, that wasn't just a movie. That was a real thing. It was a government conspiracy. And then the two dum-dums at the warehouse open the tank. It's a toxic fume. Boom, goes right into the greatest soundtrack of any movie we'll ever do on the show. I got so excited. I felt like I was like 6 years old again. I was like, this is fucking amazing. And then, like you said, Trent, it's every single thing of how I was introduced to horror in my childhood. The split dog, that cadaver you were talking about, nudity, comedy, fast zombies. I always thought that, fast zombies was a big like early 2000s thing. Fuck no, we have fast zombies in this. Jokes galore. Even the acting is so much better than it should be for a movie, like you said, that is like almost like a National Lampoon zombie movie. Amazing gore. You got a bunch of horror people doing great special effects, like practical. Everything about this. I'm on cloud nine. Someone's going to have to really fuck up for me to not praise your movie for the next few episodes.
I have the same exact experience. This is 1984. I was 10. This is huge for me. And I didn't understand comedy, I don't think. I don't think I knew what comedy was.
No.
Because I just thought this was a scary movie.
Same.
And like I thought like Spinal Tap was just a cool movie about a heavy metal band. Like, what's so funny? Like, they're awesome. Yeah. So I don't think I understood all that stuff. But this is to Night of the Living Dead what Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is to the original.
Yeah. It's the
goofy, good call.
Mid-80s. And it's that mix of like macabre and goofy that I didn't really get, but I was really into it. And I would say that this is probably my comfort food for horror movies, like this and TCM2. I like that all the zombies look different in this. The thing I hate about zombie movies is you got a bunch of people in blue makeup and eyeshadow and a little dried on blood. And like, I don't know. I mean, unless you do every single extra top to bottom, I'm not that impressed. This one, they kind of were able to show the horde of zombies without, you didn't really see anything up close. You just saw a mass of people. So they did a great job. You know, obviously the more brains guy, that's just such an iconic scene when she turns around and it does that camera thing that they do in Jaws.
Yes.
On the beach.
That's so great.
It does that like, and she just sees him and he's like, more brains. Like that part really got me when I was young. I love this movie so much. This is a super sweet spot for me. I didn't like any of the sequels because I held this in such high regard. Maybe I'll go back and check them out if Kevin had any luck this week digging into the other ones. But I really don't have a whole lot to say other than this is like a banger. This is like, this is Metallica Master of Puppets. This, you know, this is everything.
So the sequel to this is interesting. It's almost got like an Evil Dead 2 vibe. They bring back a lot of the same characters, like the dude, I guess you would call him the main punk dude. So the main like younger dude, Freddy, in this, who also would play Tommy Jarvis in Friday the 13th, part 6. He comes back. It's almost like the same movie, but not quite. So it's kind of like an Evil Dead 2 thing. The third one I remember because this one really, and I know that Day of the Dead did the same thing the same year, but this one really amps up the whole like military aspect of zombies, which we would see, you know, just get recycled over and over again. The third one really plays up to that, where it's a kid and his dad is like a general that knows about the zombie stuff, and his girlfriend ends up getting bit and he goes on the run with her. It's like a whole like the Legend of Billie Jean type thing or whatever, with him and his girlfriend on the run while she turns into a zombie.
I remember that.
It's good. It's fun. I mean, it'll remind you when you watch it. But
I almost made time to watch part 5, Rave to the Grave, because the title was so awesome, Rave to the Grave. Like, oh, okay, it's going to be a big drug rave and everybody's going to take ecstasy and turn into zombies. That sounds good. But then I watched the trailer and it looked so unbelievably terrible, just looked terrible. I mean, by physically looked so bad, I was like, absolutely no way I'm going to waste that time. Talking about the effects, Dave, and I know you're taking a little bit of a shot at Dawn of the Dead. We talked about that. The blue, there's so many people that just have a dusting of makeup on. The effects are really interesting in this because you don't have the Tom Savini. I mean, this is no Dawn of the Dead as far as FX goes beyond the makeup. But I thought it was cool that every zombie looked different. There wasn't, you know, like the guy that's in the original vat looks totally different than Tarman. And Tarman looks different than the guy that's send more paramedics, another...
The half-woman.
Yeah, everything that happens is
so good.
So iconic. Send more cops. But they all kind of have their... All the zombies you do see up close, they all have their own look. Just not a standard look. And Tarman looks as good as Bub in Day of the Dead. And they're also, not only are they fast, which I forgot, but they're really, really smart. I loved how the zombies are ambushing the emergency personnel. Every time more EMTs and more police show up, the zombies all hide. And then when they get out of their cars, the zombies all run at them and and ambush them. I love that stuff.
It also, too, watching it now, I understood another reason why I liked it so much as a kid. The dialogue is very childish. Like even the way that they talk to each other, it's how I, as like a 6-year-old, would have assumed that like punk rock horny party kids would have talked to each other. Like there's one scene, like two of them are just hanging out in the cemetery and like she looks at the guy and she's like, "You'd really like to do it with me, wouldn't you?" And now we laugh at that. When I was 6, I was probably like, "Oh man, that's how grown-ups talk to each other when they're partying and getting ready to have sex."
The ending is so bleak. I think that when I watched movies at this time, even a movie like, you know, you'd have a final girl in all your slashers. So there would be kind of a happy ending. And this was just like completely like you start putting it together like, oh, wait a minute. Now they're doing this and they're burning the smoke. And then that's going to mean the rain does this. You know, it's a big perpetual thing. It's like the end of the world. And I also thought as a kid that that was a nuke. I thought that mushroom cloud.
Me too.
That meant the world is over anyway. when I first saw it back then.
I thought it's very dark too. I mean, a guy cremates himself. The guy actually loads himself into the, I was thinking, man, for such a, you know, a wacky slapstick comedy horror thing, like, and the end is getting really pretty brutal.
Well, even our two main characters, the two guys at the medical supply warehouse, whatever, which, by the way, I really wanted Freddy to do good at his job. I remember that as a kid as well. This movie taught me initiative. It taught me I had to go to work and I had to do a good job. I was rooting for Freddy to not disappoint his uncle, to have a good showing. But even those two guys, when they breathe in the toxin and then they just slowly degrade. Oh, and
great.
That is super sad. Like the scene where Freddy's girlfriend is like taking his shirt off and like you can see like the blood pooling, like all of that is done comedically and even kind of innocently. But watching it now, like that is super fucking dark.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're trapped in the attic and Freddy's trying to break in, he keeps going, I can smell your brains, Tina. Yeah. Like, that was like evil horror stuff.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about how Linnea Quigley is naked the whole movie, pretty much. And and I remember when I Googled her after she sent me a cameo because she loves me. There was an image of her as a zombie at the end, which you only get a glimpse of. I'd like to see maybe a director's cut or extended cut to see, because what I saw, she looked amazing. She looked like a Marvel character or something. It was incredibly. She was like white with like, she had the red hair. I forget which Marvel character she looked like, but
she looked like an X-Man.
Right.
When they have that, they get that one zombie strapped down. That's just the half body. I guess that's kind of like the bub of this. And she's talking about the pain of being dead. You know, they're trying to get answers from her. And that's also very dark. Like it's the pain of being dead is so much. And the only thing that alleviates it is eating brains.
Yeah, you're kind of rooting for the zombies in this. Like Dave said, like they're playing hide and seek. They're cracking jokes. She's down there like, man, I'm in pain. I just need some brains. This movie's kind of making you root for the zombies.
My favorite part, the boss man, what was his name? Was that Frank?
Yeah. Or no, Frank was the middle boss. Then the other guy said, be a man, Frank.
Yeah, the head guy. I like the part where he's just like, the hell with it. Give me the baseball bat. So I'm going to knock his damn head off. And he opens the door and just knocks his head off with the baseball bat. Yeah. Like a really funny.
I liked, whatever happens, don't name it after me. As he's like, he's leaving the medical place. Shout out Acid Rain. Yeah, I always wonder what the hell happened to the acid rain. I mean, my eighth grade science teacher told us we were history because of this acid rain and chided us for not caring about it. Here we are, much, much later. Never hear about it, but it's a factor in this movie.
Dude, this made me think that acid rain was actually going to turn people into zombies. speaking of urban legends.
Yeah, I remember having to stay inside because of acid rain, like. My mom heard about acid rain on the news, and I couldn't go out in the rain anymore. Wow. I couldn't eat lead paint anymore. All the fun stuff is gone away.
So I was really interested reading about this supposed alleged agreement between the producer of this, John Russo, and George Romero. After Night of the Living Dead, the original, they had kind of different ideas on what they wanted to do for sequels, and it ended up being decided that Romero can keep the dead. So that's why all of his are of the dead, Day of the Dead, all of that, Diary of the Dead and the rest. And Russo can do Living Dead. So, and he ended up writing, this is based on a novel that Russo wrote. And then this was going to be directed by Toby Hooper at one point, was going to direct Russo's novelization of this. It was going to be 3D. And then Hooper ended up doing Life Force, which, O'Bannon, the director of this, was a writer on. O'Bannon was a writer on tons of shit. Dead and Buried, Invaders from Mars, Total Recall. And Russo was also a producer on the 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead, directed by Tom Savini, that they did just to get it back under, to get something under copyright. It's a bizarre world.
The greatest nudity scene in any movie of all time. And I'm talking about that first corpse they let out of the room.
No. Yeah, that first one is a little tough. The yellow guy,
yeah,
he just kind of looks like a he looks like baloney.
Oh, so gross. That's what's so gross about it. Oh, I couldn't. It was so repellent, and yet I couldn't take my eyes off it. And, you know, not seeing this as comedy, just like Texas Chainsaw 2, just like Evil Dead 2. I'm just watching it. It's a serious movie. And, oh, my God. We do need. I did want to get you guys' take on one thing, though. As far as the effects go, there's one moment. I know you guys know what I'm talking about. There's one FX moment that is, what the fuck was that? When Tarman bites into Suicide's head, and all of a sudden it just shows like a pint of ice cream or something sliding. You guys see that shot?
There's a couple of shots. Even the first corpse that we're taught, yellow guy, I guess, yellow man.
Yeah.
When he runs out, there's a pretty bad like special effects when they hit him in the head and stuff. But you know what? I noticed all of that stuff and was like, it actually, again, as a kid, it probably helped me sort of like, you know, have that suspension of disbelief and feel really tough, like I'm watching a scary movie. And even now, it's forgivable. It's all of those little things are totally forgivable. And I wonder if they even were laughing on set. Like, that looks so fucking stupid.
Well, it makes you wonder, like, what they're going to do next, because they have a recklessness to them. Like, there's not a consistency throughout. Every effect is, like, kind of different. It looks like it's done by somebody else.
Yes. You guys don't, you're not, when Tarman bites, when he first appears, it goes to a shot of ice cream. The hell is that? That's so weird. Every time, like, what the hell is that? Why did they leave that in there? Could have done, come on, anything would have been better than that. So strange to me.
Do you guys happen to catch, well, let me just start by asking, have you watched this documentary on Nickelodeon and kids TV that's like taking the world by storm?
I'm well aware of it.
So Quiet on Set is the documentary, like a 4-part series right now.
Yeah.
One of the people that was was horrific during that time is a guy named Brian Peck. He was a dialogue coach that worked on all these kid shows, totally convicted of some horrific acts against children. It's a big part of the show.
Yeah.
He plays Scuzz.
Scuzz. Yeah. I knew where you were going with that. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. And I'm not kidding. We had just finished watching that when I was like, all right, got to watch Return of the Living Dead now. It was like, you have to be kidding me. Like, how is this coming together now? Not to end on a somber note, but it was pretty wild to have just come off that doc and then be like, whoa.
Yeah, I saw some talk about that connection just in the passing things that I've seen about that show. This was a hit, was a $3 or $4 million budget, made $14 million. The ending, it ends on the most classic 80s note you could with. It ends with a montage of all the best scenes from the movie to Party Time, I believe, once again. Just can't get enough. I want to turn. I've got it on right now. I wish I could hear Party Time right now, but I can't while we do this.
I was waiting for someone to like mess up a line, like it was the bloopers reel or something. They just replayed parts that they.
It's just the best scenes in a row. I was really. It should be bloopers. All right, my next pick for my undead week from 1994, a movie called Cemetery Man. The beleaguered caretaker of a small Italian cemetery searches for love while defending himself from dead people who keep rising from their graves. I had never seen Cemetery Man until very recently. This has been unavailable on streaming for a long time, as far as I know. This I eventually did find on YouTube. There has been a version floating around on YouTube that's very good. And I finally caught it on there, but it was so funny because I remember this movie vividly from back in the video store day. And I was just turned off by the stupid title, Cemetery Man. And on the cover of the version that was around here was Rupert Everett with a shovel or something. And it said Rupert Everett in big letters, Cemetery Man. It did not look like anything that I would care about. This movie is actually titled De la Morte, De la More. Now, that sounds like something that, you know,
the cinema.
I might care about it. That's a cinema right there. This movie's crazy. I love this movie. This is a immediate classic for me. I mean, you get halfway through this movie, you're like, wow, this is insane. And then you watch the second half, you're like, I can't believe this is a movie. It's so bizarre. And I loved all the, there's so much dialogue, not necessarily even dialogue, but there's voiceover, and the script, the language in this is so heavy with love and death and all this stuff. And there's so many lines that just are classic to me. I don't really know a lot about Rupert Everett. I remember the name. Was he in the Four Weddings and a Funeral or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
He had a moment. I don't know. He's one of those guys. He's fantastic in this. This is directed by Michael Soavi, who we talked about a little bit. He directed The Church, which was originally supposed to be Demons 3. He also directed Stage Fright and The Sect. He was like a second unit director on Demons and came up under Argento, doing stuff with Argento. And this is totally different than any of, to me, of any of that kind of stuff either. I mean, it's basically a comedy. It's a horror comedy, like a surrealist philosophical horror comedy. I still have no idea what it's about. I've seen it 3 or 4 times now. You know how things are. Life goes on. So this is on Shudder now, and I think if you love horror movies, you listen to this podcast, you have to watch Cemetery Man. To me, it's an instant classic, a new classic.
It's one of the most unique of the zombie movies, and we always talk about how it's hard to flip the genre on its head, and there's so many regurgitations of the same shit in this subgenre. So yeah. I love that. And obviously this is very, you got kind of like the buddy film with him and Naj or Nag or whatever.
Naggy.
His name is what he only says.
Yeah. He's like, so weird.
All of that becomes very confusing, but this exists somewhere to me between like Argento and like, maybe even like Donnie Darko. Like it has like a hipster, like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like I looked up that poem. There's like a poem that's set in it. I was like, wow, that's beautiful. That the poem about death or whatever, it's toward the end. And I looked it up wondering what famous poem it was, but it's from this movie. Like the script of this movie is that eloquent.
Yes,
I've loved this movie forever, and I have a special place in my heart because this is the movie that when I didn't know what to say, when I saw Chop Top in real life, he brought up Cemetery Man. And I was like, we had just had a conversation about it. And I had sent you a link.
We had
watched the same link though. I will be telling that story forever. That's my biggest, horror moment in real life.
I'm glad that I never saw this. It's super fitting that you picked it right after Donnie Darko because, you know, I did watch Donnie Darko back when it came out. I did not know what this movie was. I'm super glad I didn't watch it in the 90s because I would not have gotten it. Really glad to have watched it now. And then I too had an interesting relationship with like the existence of this movie. I knew it was out there. I too, Trent, I don't exactly know what Rupert Everett's big deal is. I just know that he had a moment or what was a thing. And this was like, you know, one of those like early films for him or something. But then you guys kept talking about it over the last few years. And I had it in my head, probably from lack of asking for clarity, that this was some like super hard, fucked up movie. And then Dave did send us that link. And I thought I'd seen it. And like I was trying to remember last week, but I had only really watched the beginning. And I just remember when Dave sent the link and we did an episode, we were leaving. And somebody, I don't want to call out, I don't remember who, was just like, yeah, like it starts off and like there's necrophilia and this guy's like banging zombies. And I was like, ah, oh, this is some fucking effedupmovies.com bullshit or something. Like, okay, whatever. I don't have to like spend too much time with it. But wow, this is an absolute instant classic, Trent. This is amazing. Really couldn't believe, like I kept pausing it because I'm like, did that line of dialogue really just come from a silly movie that where he just is this lonely guy with this, you know, like Hodor from fucking Game of Thrones is like his buddy, and who knows if the rest of the world even exists. He says like the deepest things in like this such like flippant and like sad way, but the horror aspect of it, I mean, that was just like run of the mill to me. And I kept wondering, like, what is it about this movie? Like, why does it not fit in with like a horror movie, a scary movie? What's the deal here? But at the same time, why am I so enthralled? The greatest thing that this movie does is dumps you into a world and immediately makes you understand this is the world. Don't ask any questions. Just you live in this world now for the next 90 minutes, and we're not going to tell you what it is or explain anything. And it just takes you on a ride. And I appreciate that so much when a film can do that, drop you into this ridiculous world where this dude lives in a cemetery. The dead are coming back to life. He's trying to get the town to like do something about it. Like, you know, it's just like a fence he needs put up in his yard and everyone's just ignoring him. And it just gets more increasingly insane. You know, took me down. Like at first I was like, this is kind of like Army of Darkness or like Reanimator vibes. But then like, you know, it starts to get into like Donnie Darko. It gets into like, you know, Walking Tall, even American Psycho. Like it gets there's American Psycho vibes here. I wondered if like Ellis maybe loved this film or something, or even like the Dylan Dog comics or whatever that it's based off of. If he liked that. But then at the very end, I could not be happier with the ending of this film and how much conversation we could have just about literally the last 5 minutes. What does it mean? What just happened?
Yeah. We all do what we can not to think about life. Rattling off these lines like Smith lyrics or something, you know?
Yeah, there's got to be a college that has a course just on Cemetery Man.
I like the fact that this exists in a world that's very much like The Evil Dead because of you have... the relationships, relationship like zombies, undead relationship like you and your girl. and then it also has like the, you know, the end of the world is just beyond the town limit where you are. And you're in like this isolated thing, which raises a lot of questions in itself. But I think we can openly talk about the ending of this movie.
Well, okay. What was the thing about him being impotent or all the all the kids in town? Every time Francesco Della Morte has to go to town, all the kids are the biker kids and stuff. They all laugh and point and yell at him and say that he's impotent. And then, he says at some point, oh, I started that rumor. I just like to, you know, I like people to not think about me or something like that. But then, he's not, because he goes to get when he meets the like the third version of the love of his life there. She says she can't love a man unless he's impotent. And so he goes to the doctor to try to get his dick cut off, and the doctor won't do it. He just paralyzes it. And the doctor thinks he's impotent. He's like, oh, you don't have a penis. Everybody knows that. You know, what was that whole thing about?
It was another comedic stab at it was a comedic stab at something very dark about how lonely this movie really is and how lonely this guy is. These kids started the rumor. You know, he eventually reveals that he actually started the rumor, and they just continue to make fun of him. And he does it so that he doesn't. It's just one more thing he doesn't have to worry about. I mean, this is a guy that sits at home and reads the phone book to pass the time.
Literally,
he has no interest. And then it's very telling and intentional that that the same actress plays three different women in the movie that he comes across and quote unquote falls in love with. Yeah, thank God for that. Holy shit. Anna Fulci. Yes, thank you. Yeah, he finally meets the third one and is like, OK, well, I can't do this. The second one, I believe, is the one where he's like, all right, I got to get rid of this.
Yeah.
And that, again, just kind of turns the tables. That's a really messed up part of the story. So I think he's just doing it because he wants to literally remain as lonely as possible. I think part of the movie is also about like, you know, that line, does the rest of the world even exist? I think another question would be, is he even interested in it? Does it exist if you can shut it out and make it not exist and just literally continue to like isolate yourself in a smaller and smaller, smaller portion of the world? Does anything else even matter?
But what was the thing with her saying, I can only be with an impotent man. I'm too afraid. I'm afraid of erections, basically. And then
a phobia.
What is it?
She said she had a phobia.
Yeah, a phobia. Yeah, of erections. And so then he gets his I don't know, he gets his penis paralyzed, and then she comes back and says, "Oh, I was raped by my boss, and I realized that actually I could never be with an impotent man. I'm with him now. And then leaves. That's so weird.
It's a triumphant story for the penis, though. I mean,
no. I think, again, you can go down like you can go to really dark places. I mean, that, again, weird. It's a very dark, I think, point that they're making about, sexual assault, things like that. I mean, I think that is totally meant to be delved into, because he goes from her to the third version of her. And you think like everything's all good. And at this point, I think that Cemetery Man is a very sympathetic character, and you're rooting for the guy in some weird way, like almost like just as listless as he is, but you are rooting for him. He gets to the third girl. They do have sex. It's great. He finds out she's a sex worker and kills him. And I feel like at that point that the second girl, that whole story was kind of building you up to this point where you then, at least for me, are now actively rooting against this guy.
Yeah,
scumbag.
That's just such a huge left turn. Like, what? Oh my God, this movie is really getting dark.
Yeah, that's honestly the only, when it flips to him, because at some point, you know, because he keeps seeing death, which is another like trippy part of this. That's like, that's our Frank the Rabbit for this film. He keeps seeing death. And at some point, death's like, why are you wasting all this time killing the dead? Just go kill the living. And at first, you're kind of like, all right, this could get good. But then as soon as he kills the sex worker, you're like, yeah, that's not cool. Everybody else, I honestly didn't really care. It was kind of like fun. It is fucked up, but it is a big left turn. But
I mean, he's just wantonly, he just shoots everyone, doctors, nurses, his friend. I mean, that is so crazy.
I like the cop that never suspects him no matter what.
Funny.
He's like, so there's a maniac shooting people. Oh, you got a gun. Good. You can defend yourself.
Yeah.
Like, not a clue.
I was dying of this cop can't, you know, Francesco keeps going out, committing all these crimes. And this, it's so funny and weird. It took me a while to really realize now this cop is never going to put it together. And so, you know, by the third or fourth incident, I was losing it when the cop was like, Francesco, there's another maniac. As Francesco's running out of the building with a gun, you know,
this movie is not kind to police, to really any city officials. They met the mayor, just about anybody that should be keeping this town in line. The movie is not kind to them in the funniest ways.
Yeah. You don't see the lute very often in film. Music instrument.
Fan?
Yeah. Give me the loot. Give me the loot.
You know, you guys are talking about the cover of this back when it was on the shelf. And
yeah.
I remember it looked like The Burbs.
Yes, exactly.
He was just standing in the middle of like a cemetery or something.
Yes. And yeah, that was totally the vibe. Yeah. And this wasn't released in the States until 96. So it was a delayed release on this. And I couldn't find any budget box office.
The artwork that's on the shutter thing is super cool. It looks like old like Hammer artwork.
Yeah, it's had many different covers and stuff. That just the one that it had the incarnation that ended up at our video store just turned me off back in the day. Educational one too, because I now know what an ossuary is. Yes. Ossuary is where
good thing to know.
Yeah, that's where they store the skeletons and the bones. There's more room in there, and a lot of times once you've been dead, I guess in the ground long enough that nobody really cares if the bones are there, they move the bones to the ossuary where you can more efficiently house all these bones, and then you make more room for somebody in the plot. That was a big part of this movie and very creepy and gross. I mean, this movie looks amazing. The special effects are all practical, prime practical effects. The ossuary looked amazing with all the skeletons everywhere. I love the camera work. I loved all the shots looking out from the grave. You know, the camera's always like looking up from the dug plot and like to the trees and stuff like that. I loved all those surreal moments. I mean, it's really is good looking to me.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the first time there's been like a real decent upload of it. So it's cool.
I live right next to a cemetery. I don't know if I ever talked about this, but there's a cemetery right next to my house. I walk the dogs through it. I go running. I find, you know, cemeteries to be, I don't know, pretty like relaxing and like kind of serene places.
Yeah.
But being that close to it and literally being there at least once, if not multiple times per day, I have like walked through there while the guys that are working at the cemetery are digging a grave, while I've, you know, gone running in and, oh, there's a actual burial happening and there's people in chairs set up and stuff like that. I will say, since I watched Cemetery Man, I think about my local next door sort of sanctuary in a much different way.
I loved after the bus scout accident, a whole bus load of Boy Scouts dies. And it's like all of a sudden, so they all get buried, they have the funeral, and then it's like busy season at the cemetery. They all come back to life at once. And Francesco has to like be picking them all off. They almost overwhelm him. So good.
Really good deaths. All the zombie deaths that are just happening in the middle of these like romances and this American Psycho kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's all these deaths like every 5 minutes, it seems like.
What were the fades? This movie seems like it was made for television. There's every scene like fades to commercial and fades back. I couldn't find anything about it ever being, I don't think this was ever made for television, but did you guys notice that? It was kind of strange.
I thought there was something like screwed up. I was waiting for like the title card to come up or something. It was very, that was a little bit disjointing. And same thing. I was looking it up like, was this made for TV? Like, is this like whatever? Weird. Is this Wes Craven's Chiller? What's happening?
I'd give my life to be dead. Not one.
So what do you think? What's the ending? What do we think the ending is?
No clue, man.
Oh, I no idea. And I don't care. Like it doesn't seem like they ran out of ideas. It just seems like they just did something haphazard with the plot. And they do that the whole way through. And I don't mind for some reason.
Everything is so deep. I think that it's got, there has to be, there has to be an actual point and an end of the story. Well, maybe not an end of the story, but a finality of like his, that particular journey. Like he reached sort of like an end game for that part of his journey.
He becomes Nagy or whatever. I mean, Nagy also could have been in taxidermia with his spaghetti eating with his hands. He's always eating with his hands and it's all over him.
Well, and they show this, the snow globe is shown in the beginning of the movie real quick.
Right.
And then again at the end, they're just in a snow globe, bro. I don't know. I wish I could say that I have more of an idea of what was being said here, because I agree with you. Things are being said. I'm enjoying it more for the movie that it is and, you know, over my head.
I think the snow globe being at the end or being at the beginning and then obviously the end. I mean, you could get lazy with your theories, I think, and go like Jacob's Ladder or something on this whole thing and be like, you know, he was like sitting in his weird little shack and staring at the snow globe and everything was in his head. I think that's too easy. Total cop out. I don't think that's what they're getting at, because I think the most important thing that happens at the end that should spark debate is, how come Nagy suddenly can talk completely normally and he now can only say like a single word like Nagy did the entire rest of the movie?
Right. That's so weird. No clue, man. If anybody wants to comment some theories or reach out on Instagram, Speak All Evil Pod, I'd love to hear more takes on this movie next week.
Yes.
It's Dave's turn again. We've got Cats Out of Town. The picks. The circle is going faster. What do you got for us, Dave?
I got 1981 Toby Hooper classic Funhouse.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice.
And 1995 Stuart Gordon classic Castle Freak.
Wow. Nice. All right. You've been talking about those for the life of the podcast. So let's check them out.